Doop 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 doop. Podcasting with Baloo. You doing pretty good?
Yes, I am.
Just another movie night.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the show. We are Just Another Movie Night. I am Scott.
And I'm Joe.
You are Joe, and you're with me.
I'm Joe. I am with you. I can't say that I'm happy about this particular cast, but I'm here.
Oh, no. What happened? Guess what we're doing today?
We are celebrating the life.
Oh no!
Career,
hun. Oh my gosh!
Wait, did I fuck up?
Yeah. Do you know what we're doing today?
Edit that out.
We're talking trash.
Talking trash.
Talking trash, Joe.
Did you know?
Talking trash, indeed.
Talking trash.
You know why? Because this is our show to spoil, debate, crap on, and give second chances to the lowest rated, the much debated, and the often forgotten flicks of the internet, all while asking the question, is this the worst movie ever made? And if not, what is? Because here on the show, we believe that you can't truly review a film unless you know what the lowest rated is.
And what the worst movie is.
Yes. What is the worst? That's what we're here for. We're here to suffer through it for you. For who? I don't know. For somebody.
I mean, somebody's suffering. And
we are suffering.
I'm definitely suffering.
And some people might enjoy our suffering. And that's what we're here to do. Make a couple people laugh.
I think there are some people that enjoy our suffering.
Yeah, I hope so.
Well, anyway.
I rather enjoy it. I'm not going to lie.
Sometimes I enjoy it.
Sometimes, only sometimes?
On this day now. This is not a good day.
What are we doing on the show today?
Celebrating the career of Roger Corman.
We've been doing it all month.
Yeah, he just celebrated his 98th birthday. And Roger Corman is national treasure in this household. And he has 944 credits on IMDb, 492 as a producer, 56 as director, 45 as an actor, and 10 as writer. Lots of people in Hollywood got their start with Roger Corman. And to name a few, Sandra Bullock. That's shocking. David Carradine, which we know. And Sylvester Stallone. Sylvester Stallone, who's quoted as saying, when we did Death Race 2000 in 2.5 weeks, it shows you it could be done. It was the only unofficial college of the arts where you got to learn filmmaking for free by a master. If I hadn't done those parts, I probably wouldn't be here today. He provided a forum for a lot of us to grow. We were the seeds, and he owned the farm.
That's an awesome quote, by
the way. It's an awesome quote, and that's Sylvester Stallone talking about Roger Corman. So, we are talking about Frankenstein Unbound today. This is his last directed film after an almost 20-year absence. Co-written by Roger Corman, based on a book by Brian Aldiss, had a budget of $11.5 million. Corman got $1 million and only making $335,000 in theaters.
That's right.
So he got $1 million, and this movie only made $335,000 in theaters. Okay.
Do you think that's more shocking, or do you the fact that this was actually in theaters more shocking?
The fact that this was in theaters is more shocking.
Right?
100%.
After seeing this film, doesn't it feel like this movie was like one of those after-school specials that actually had some gore in it?
You know what? This has the feel of 1988, The Gate? 1987, The Gate? It has that feel like you're watching an early 80s movie with, like, the same kind of like special effects. That's the way I felt. I felt like I was watching that movie.
I felt like it was an episode of Jim Henson's Storytellers. If Jim Henson's Storytellers came on across the screen and they cut out some of the weird gore in this movie, it could have just moved into that Jim Henson hour.
Well, this came out in 1990.
Yeah, it
It
did.
definitely had the same kind of special effects as like our godforsaken Mortal Kombat movie.
I don't think so. I don't think it was that bad in special effects. I think it was just they did everything else. I mean, what's shocking is, I guess, $11 million. Seeing this movie is a little shocking when you think $11 million. You're like, there's no way it's $11 million. Some of that has to be just paying people because the cast is pretty great.
The cast is really good,
I mean,
yeah.
it's like loaded with some stars that, I mean, recognizable faces, which is kind of a shock, you know. I mean, I guess though, with Roger Corman, he had a nose for talent.
You know, I have to say something about since we're discussing
I should have
the.
said an eye. Why I said nose, we'll never know.
Well,
But he sniffed him out.
he can smell
He
the
can smell it.
craptacular actors.
I would not
I
craptacular. We're
will
naming
say
amazing people every
that there are
episode.
some really good actors in this. However, since we're talking about actors, I will say that there is one person in this movie that was miscast and not even used as much as she should have been, and that's Bridget Fonda.
Very odd.
I don't know why they chose her.
Was it just me? Was nine in the 90 Bridget Fonda like the prettiest thing?
She was so pretty, yes, of course, and I think she's pretty, but
Mean, just
I
something
think
about 90s Bridget Fonda.
no, he hired her because he's friends with her father.
Oh, I'm sure I wasn't talking about that. I was
Yeah.
just saying that, wow, she's it's just every time you see her in any movie from the 90s and the late 80s, she looks exactly the same for a very long time.
Yeah, she's always
Yeah.
looked the same for sure.
So one of those odd actresses that kind of just disappeared for movies.
Yeah, I don't
Yeah.
know what happened to her.
Yeah.
But yeah, she had a moment in time there that she was like doing a lot of work, and then that's it. She just dropped off.
Yeah,
So.
there was a high point for her, and then it just yeah. But this also stars the main actor of this movie is actually John Hurt.
Oh no. Not again. It's got some Pepto-Bismol.
Yeah.
Which a classic actor. Like he's one of those actors that he shows up in something, he always elevates his moment or his role or whatever. It's so odd when you watch some of these movies and you see these great actors in these films, and it just feels like you can tell they filmed this quick, small budget, and he's just like getting to run around and do silly things and wear costumes. It's you I was watching in this moment in this movie and looking for the moments where you know John Hurt was going, oh, I'm in a bad movie.
I mean,
You know what I
after
mean?
he read the script, you have to read the script and realize,
Here's the
oh.
thing. I don't know if the script is bad because there are some interesting elements to it. There's an interesting idea. I'm guessing the book that it's based on is a more intriguing concepts, but I kind of like the idea of looking at science and scientists and the creation of things through a lens of somebody like traveling through time and running into scientists from, you know, from these fairy tale stories, you know, these big stories. And it's kind of like an interesting parallel. And I think that's intriguing. I think there's something definitely there to it. But the movie is done in a way where, like I said, it feels like it was one of these short stories in one of these television shows, like Goosebumps or not Goosebumps, but what's the one with Steven Spielberg did? Didn't he have one?
Oh yeah.
What's the
He
one that
did
you had? Tales from the
Tales
Dark
from the
Side
Dark Side.
you know, all those
Yeah.
shows like that where it was just like these, you know, like 40-minute episodes and they just told you these little horror stories. This could have been that. Scientist jumps through time. I mean, we'll just talk about the plot. It's very easy because is all it is a scientist from the future, which is 2034.
No, it's 2031.
Oh, 31.
And
So I'm so sorry.
apparently they would just wear conic kind of clothing because everything's like cones.
Yeah, there's a lot of
Conic,
cones.
conic, conic. How do you
Tunics?
say no, like when they show the children, they're just wearing like cone dresses. the clay cones. You don't remember?
They do? I just remember them wearing, like, flaps. A lot of flaps. There was, like, a flap over their chest. Baggy. Everybody was wearing MC Hammer clothes. I guess I thought that was going to really take off.
No, they look like cones. I'll show you a picture.
What do you mean by cones?
Like, their outfits were, like their dresses. The girls were wearing dresses, and they were wearing, like, cones. Like, you don't remember?
I just don't know. I'm trying to imagine what a cone is in your mind.
Like, their skirts look like cones. I'll have to show you a picture when I find it.
Like, what cone? We're talking about, like an ice cream cone?
Yeah, like an ice cream cone. And they were, like, yeah.
Everybody kind of looked like Dutch. Those Dutch kid, like, statues.
Oh, like, yeah, little tchotchke things.
Yeah, those little, you know, the Dutch boy and the Dutch girl statue. That's what everybody kind of looked like. And we only see three or four kids in this movie.
Yeah, it's like four of them.
Yeah, and they're nutcases. But everybody's wearing baggy, baggy silver clothes. Shiny clothes. All the scientists in this show, in this movie, in the opening, are all wearing giant baggy Calvaricis and, like, anything from the 90s that they thought were going to be, like, really popular.
Oh, my God. Calvaricis.
It looks like a Nike commercial, what they thought that was going to be the future. You know, everybody's mm-hmm. got baggy clothes, really silver, a shiny everything. And it's like, oh, that's a science outfit. Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
You know? It's odd, but yeah, this movie is just basically really easy to talk about. Stop looking for the cone.
We're
gonna move on from the cone.
No, because I want you to see what I'm talking about.
What good podcasting information this is. Visuals. Well, visual we got aids nothing else. Of cones.
This movie is so.
You hit two cones. Those could have been people. Those could have been guests at her wedding. They were cones.
Okay.
We got lots to talk about. I don't know what you're talking about.
I'm just going to be complaining the whole time.
Isn't that the whole show?
Yeah, I guess you're right. It sure is. Oh, my God.
So, anyways. So, we're in 2031. And we're seeing a scientist who his creation is the idea that he can shoot a laser beam at anything and make it disappear. He's saying that he's using black hole technology.
A weapon beyond your wildest imagination, General. A particle beam that simply makes the enemy disappear. Project Safe World can give your armed forces the power of a black hole.
Okay. All right. You know what? There's nothing better than an idea than shooting a black hole into anywhere on the Earth, and that might be good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, the thing that sucks everything into it, like a void?
Yep.
He's shooting that at something. And the funniest thing is he's using the Statue of Liberty to shoot at, a tiny little miniature version of it. What is his idea here? Like, let me prove the point that this might be a disaster and shoot out of an iconic thing that we have in the United States.
Well, can I ask you a question? I was a little confused by this opening scene because they are shooting a laser beam at a little mini Statue of Liberty. However, were they trying to send it through time?
No.
Where were they sending it?
That's the whole point. He's saying he's creating a black hole, which would mean just he wants. And the logic here is completely disastrous.
If they're creating a black hole and they're sending it through that black hole, how would they know it went through the black hole?
No, okay. He's saying that he made a weapon that when it shoots at a target, it will make it disappear. It would just erase it. He's saying that he's using black hole technology, which doesn't necessarily make any sense whatsoever, because if he was using black hole technology, which what does black hole technology even mean? Those words are just so stupid together. But if he's shooting a black hole at an object, it would be creating a rip in the middle of our planet and creating something that would keep growing.
Right. Wouldn't he be, if literally he would be creating a black hole on planet Earth?
Exactly. So what he's saying is not true. What it sounds like to me is it just disintegrates things when it hits it.
Right.
Why he says the word black hole is kind of baffling. But again, this is one of those things where scientists just don't get black holes, you know, in these old pop culture things. And that's why it's science fiction. At the end of the day, it's just fiction. Mm-hmm. It's just nonsense. It's just idea. People are coming up with ideas to trying to like gel an idea together. So of course, naturally, and let's just back up and say, again, he says he's creating a weapon to create peace.
I don't understand that at all.
Like what, I was like,
what is your goal? What is your goal with it?
This is, I guess it's supposed to be a parallel to creating the atomic bomb. Well, if we create this, we can cause peace on Earth because no one will want to fight because we could just drop a bomb on them. But the problem, what they didn't think of, is that everybody gets an atomic bomb now. And now everybody can threaten each other. And now everybody's always on edge.
True.
But, I mean, it did. We haven't had an actual World War III. We keep having problems. But in a sense, is it creating peace because you're under fear? And so here he is going, hey, I'm going to create a weapon that could just make anything disappear. So what if someone else creates that same weapon? It's just another nonsense thing. But he thinks it's going to create peace on Earth. But the problem is, while being interviewed, he's like, well, the interviewer person's like, well, there's a lot of weird things that have been happening on the planet since you created it. And he's like, it's not me. But then that reporter goes away. He goes, yeah, it was me. I was like, what? Our main character is a guy. He looks out the window and sees a rip in the sky. And he goes, yeah, I did that. Yeah, that sucks.
Yeah, but doesn't he at one point he says, well, that may not be a good thing.
Yeah, he pretty much says that when he looks at it. He's like, oh, you know, I fucked up.
Yeah.
You know, I was really looking for peace on Earth and I really created a clusterfuck. What the reporter says is people have disappeared. There's a rip in the sky that's creating weather events. By the way, the thing in the sky looks like a giant rip of purple light.
Mm-hmm.
Like neon lightning clouds.
Like someone just like cut the sky.
Yes.
Yeah.
Clouds building again, Joe.
I wanted to create a weapon that wouldn't destroy the world. And look what I did.
Is it reversible?
Needs more work.
To be even funnier with the technology of 2031, the cars are kit.
This car looks like a cross between like the Batmobile painted silver.
Yes, I was thinking this too. It's kit in the Batmobile
and the Catmobile
mixed. and the Catmobile.
the Batmobile and kit.
Yes,
mixed in together like they had a baby. But here's the thing, I'm still. When I went into this movie, I was thinking something completely different.
Yeah, I didn't expect time travel.
I did not either. So we see John Hurt leaving in his Catmobile.
Yeah, like cat.
And for some odd reason, okay, the movie wants us to know that he gets an alert from his car that there's a blip on his security system. That there might be an intruder at his house. So he says, oh no, it's just the neighborhood kids playing. Okay.
Yeah he knows that. Okay. Those little bastards are always on his lawn.
Yeah, kind of like ours.
Yeah.
But anyway, we have that problem. But
all night long.
Anyway, so he just knows that there's some kids playing there, which is odd because these kids are so strange. I did not expect this to be like, he pulls up to his house and the kids are in his front yard digging a huge hole and burying a bicycle.
They're burying a bicycle and doing satanic chants at it.
Okay.
What have we here? Is it dead?
It died this morning.
How do you know it's dead?
She got a new one.
Ah, progress.
Secula, seculorum, funiculi, funicula.
Okay, Sarah.
Well, this is shocking to me and also ridiculous and stupid because why are these children burying a bicycle, number one, and why are they doing it in front of his home? And he just acts like he knows these kids. Like, ah, they come around all the time. First of all, why are these kids around your house?
Yeah.
Why? I don't even...
And they when they're doing their little chant, their creepy, creepy chant...
And they're...
They say that the bike outfits. Has died. And he's like... Yeah. The cone outfits. And he's like, how do you know it died? Oh, because she got a new bike. And he's like, ah, ha, ha, technology taking over. Because now she has the same exact bicycle, but with the spokes covered up like pie pants.
Like, what kind of little shit overprivileged little brat is this? She buries her old bicycle because she got a new one? There's nothing wrong with the old one.
I think the next gen of game systems that I get, I'm going to go to the neighbor's yard and bury the old gen in the front yard. Do you think they'll be happy or...
I'm pretty sure they'll be upset. They'll get a notification on their Ring camera that there's a psycho in their
garden. You know, I'm never going to bury one of my game systems. Let's change it. If I get a new remote control and I just go bury it, I'm just going to dig and do a chant in front of their house. Do you think they're going to be like super stoked? Do you think they're going to be like, or do you think they're going to go, oh, that crazy guy that puts all the crazy stuff out for Halloween?
Yeah, they'll probably think that you're a witch or a warlock.
Yeah, I knew it.
Yep.
I knew it. Just use one of my really bad pictures for my photo on the news.
Oh my god. One where you look like a psycho.
Yeah. One of the ones you post of me like picking my teeth or something like that.
I never post pictures of you picking your teeth, sir. I will never do that. Ever. I'm like, why? I'm married to this goober?
Me looking angry, not knowing that you're taking a picture of me.
I don't post bad pictures of you because...
Yes, you do. Like in the sun in my eyes or something?
No. You're still handsome as hell when you have the sun in your eyes. Okay. Whatever, dude.
I'm going to bury my remote control. We're moving on.
Yeah, and so the strangest thing happens. Okay, so he's talking to these kids, which... Why is this even in the movie? It's so stupid. He has 30 seconds of screen time with these kids who we don't even know or care to know. And all of a sudden, a big flash comes out of the sky. And he's sucked into the freaking cloud.
Don't forget about this, okay? He actually saves the kids because they're trying to bring their new bicycle in the house. He tells them to get in my house.
Okay, because there's like
my neighbor kids, get in the house.
A gust of wind happening.
But then Genghis Khan flies out on a horse and throws a spear at him.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that.
For no reason. But Genghis Khan shoots out of the sky, comes down and throws a spear instantly at him that somehow stops before it hits his face. And then they're all just sucked away. Now, you think that Genghis Khan, by the way, I don't know if it's Genghis Khan, some dude on a horseback that looks like Genghis Khan. Looks like he's in Bill and Ted's in the sporting section. And they get like, you think that in the future, because he's going to get sucked through time now. Well, did Genghis Khan get sucked with him to that time?
Well, I don't know, because he literally threw the spear at his face and it stopped in time and then he got sucked back in.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I guess.
Why wouldn't they be?
Maybe he went back to his own time.
I would love a world where Genghis Khan is running around in the movie.
Oh my god, that would just make this even five times worse.
Yeah, it's insane, because later on in the movie, other characters get sucked in time with him. So why wouldn't Genghis Khan be a part of this movie?
We don't need Genghis Khan. He went back to his own time. He's just, you know, roaming around right now.
Everybody's got, like, I think the most relatives of all time, I think everybody has DNA with Genghis Khan. So this might explain a little more of that, too.
Oh, my God. I'm a quarter Genghis Khan.
I apparently everybody is.
Because I got a temper.
Nice. Anybody who's an Aries.
Oh, damn.
he gets sucked in time. He gets sucked up into the sky.
But they take his car with him, so he has his car.
Yes, his car and him, a cat, we're calling the car. And the reason we keep talking about it being Kit, a version of Kit, it talks.
Yeah, it's like Jarvis.
It's a female car, and it's got an attitude.
Mm-hmm.
And when they land in where they land, he asks the car, where are we? And they're in the middle of a forest. And the car says, the sticks.
We're in the sticks.
And I was looking at you like, why would a car even know, like, to say that? Or a joke. That's like the car saying, well, what road, where are we at now? Oh, the boonies. No, but literally, I need to know where we are.
Yeah, no, the car doesn't give him any information.
Yeah, it doesn't help out really ever.
Well, okay, the problem I'm having
except with when this... you need things printed. That's a thing in this movie.
Well, okay, this car can do a lot of things, by the way. It's self-driving, it can print things out in the car, it talks to you, it's pretty interesting. Anyway, it also looks pretty. It's like a little silver bullet. But anyway, so he hides the car, like, kind of in Marty McFly fashion in the Back to the Future Part 3. Remember, he
I wouldn't say hide it. He just goes, hang out, be a good girl.
He puts it in, like, a little shed to hide it. It's like a little shed.
When does he do that?
Yeah, when he first got there.
I thought he just said stay in the forest.
Nope, that was later. He put this in, like, a little shed.
He found a shed.
Yep, and he actually put it in there.
I don't remember that yep. at all. Wow, Jesus. Okay.
And it doesn't have a door. It's just, like, a little, like, shed with, like, one side open. So that anyone could stumble upon this thing, but whatever. Why would it matter? And he seems just fine.
Not only fine, he's pretty static, like, ecstatic about everything that's happening in this movie.
He doesn't have any cares in the world. Like, something just happened to you, dude. You just got sucked into a time portal. Who knows where you are, okay? Who knows where? And he's not even concerned. He just gets out of the car and starts walking. Comes up to a town where everyone's dressed in, like, period clothes and looking at him funny because obviously he's just wearing, like, a suit jacket and some slacks. And he's not taken aback by this at all.
Yeah, he goes into a pub and he actually sells what seems to be a wedding ring. I didn't understand that either. He takes off a gold ring off his ring finger, it seems to be to me. And he says, how much for this? No, like, I'll give you £50.
Yeah, now, the reason he's trying to sell his ring is because he wants food. So
he's only got a MasterCard.
Suddenly, he's hungry and he wants food. And he only has a wallet full of plastic.
Yeah.
So he's like, oh, well, here, can you take my ring and, you know, I'll sell it to you and you can give me some money. Okay, fine. Great. Still, not even bothered by anything that's happening. These people are, I mean, you're obviously in the 1800s. Obviously.
Yeah, he keeps telling everybody he's from America.
Okay. Well, yeah. We all know that John Hurt is not American.
Yeah, and he says, well, New Wave, because someone later on points it out to him. They go, oh, you're not British. And he's like, oh, I'm kind of a New Wave American.
He says I'm a, yeah, like a New Wave American.
Yeah.
I'm like, first of all, why would they ever even know what that means? And that's not even a thing.
Yeah.
And he's just so casual about it, and he sits down in this pub in front of a man who we learn is not only Raul Julia, but he's playing Dr. Frankenstein.
Yeah.
And he's just not even, John Hurt is not even moved at all, the fact that he's sitting in front of Dr. Frankenstein.
No, he's pretty shocked.
He That's seems a moment. Fine.
No, he doesn't know. He's just talking to a guy. He doesn't know who it is at first, and they're kind of having a talk about how they're both scientists or doctors.
No.
And he's in Switzerland.
Yeah. Right?
That's the big thing. He's in Switzerland now.
They make mention of it because Dr. Frankenstein's looking at a newspaper and he sees it's Geneva.
Which he can, yeah.
And the date.
And he sees the date. And, you know, everybody's speaking, you know, American. You know, English. Everybody speaks English. And, you know, big Switzerland thing. So, yeah, I guess that's a thing. And he can just talk to them. Everybody's fine. He can read the newspaper. Okay. So he's in Switzerland. And then he finds out that the guy in front of him that he's trying to chat with, who's kind of being rude to him, when they say the guy serving the food tells him, you're Dr. Frankenstein. And that's when John Hurt's like, oh my God, he's kind of shocked. And he's like, I've heard of your work. And he's like, you're mistaken. No one's ever heard of my work. And he has to leave. They mention how his brother was killed. And the criminal who's being like jailed and being sentenced is the nanny of his brother who was murdered. And she's being held for the murder.
Okay, I need help with this.
Yeah, I don't...
Okay, first of all, what does this have to do with anything? This is just filler in a movie.
It's strange filler, too.
They take us to a fucking courtroom where this lady's on trial for killing his brother. Now, how old was his brother?
And where's the parents?
Where's the parents?
Because the brother must have been young if he had a nanny.
But Raul Julia is an older man.
Yes.
So how does he have a brother that's a young kid that needs a nanny? What the hell?
That's what I was. Why wouldn't it be the son or the daughter or like a, I don't know. I guess it could be stepson.
No sense.
Well, what's even more nuts is in the courtroom, Mary Schelling.
Shelley.
Oh, I'm sorry. Mary Schelling.
Shelley.
Shelley. I'm sorry, Mary Shelley.
Yes. You keep saying Schelling, who's not yet Mary Shelley, but...
Okay, so what's even crazier is that Mary Shelley is in the courtroom. Did I say it right?
Yes!
So, she's in the courtroom.
Why?
So they're kind of posing that Frankenstein's real.
Yeah.
You're not surprised by this. The writer of the novel that created this character is in the real life with him.
Yes, I'm surprised by this whole movie.
And why doesn't John Hurt know he knows of Frankenstein?
Right.
Because of the book?
Okay, well, yes, obviously.
And not of the real person?
Well, it's never been established he's a real person.
He's sitting in front of him. He's a real person.
Right. Well, I know he finds that out now.
So you're telling me that nobody in history ever found out that Frankenstein actually exists? Like Victor Frankenstein wasn't a real person that she wrote the book about?
I guess I never did any research.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's like, he doesn't know this. Like, he's a famous scientist. He's read this book. He's mm-hmm. very enamored. Like, when he sees her, he's like, oh my God, that's Mary Shelley.
Yeah. Who's being played by Bridget Fonda.
Yeah.
Doesn't fit.
It's odd. But he's more in shock with, oh my God. And when he saw Frankenstein, he didn't like say, I thought you were a fake character, or he's freaked out because we're guessing that in this world, Frankenstein is a real person, and then this scientist has known about his work. But now what we're finding out is, no, he's read the book, and he's meeting a fake character. And so they're suggesting that he was a real character as well, and nobody ever found out about these famous murders around the area where she wrote the book, and also about the real life man who was also a doctor who famously, there was a bunch of murders around him. His brother was mysteriously murdered and a nanny was hung for. Then his wife was mysteriously murdered. Like this would all be in the papers. It would say that her book was created off of this whole thing that happened.
Right.
So he would know what the outcome here was.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a scientist. And not one moment of this does he think, holy shit, if I do something here, I might change the future.
No, he doesn't think about the future at all.
No, in fact, he goes out of his way to jeopardize the future.
Oh my God, yeah.
And he's an asshole already because he already jeopardized the future when he came from the future. He created what looked like hell on earth.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this guy's a complete piece of shit.
Yeah, he is.
And the funniest part is, he keeps acting like he's noble because his first instinct is to free the nanny. And he goes on like a journey of trying to free the nanny. And every idea that he comes up with to free the nanny is the dumbest fucking idea I've ever heard in my life.
Well, she was found guilty and is going to be hanged at noon tomorrow. And he only has that amount of time to clear her name and get her released. And I'm like, okay, first of all, why do you give a rat's ass about this person you've never met in your life? And why would you even, like, want to change how the course of things go? Like, he doesn't even consider this. So this is, like, what I would definitely call, like, plot filler. Because, honestly, it's just filler. There's no reason for this whole 20 minutes to be wasted on this trial. He's at the trial of this nanny who killed Frankenstein's brother, supposedly. Then he meets Mary Shelley there. And then he's trying to go through all these channels to get this nanny released. He ends up at the hanging where he tries to stop it.
Okay, yeah, I didn't want you to jump all the way to it. That's why I was trying to bring up the whole idea of like why he's doing the things that he does. But the things that he does are not logical in any sense for a scientist to think, how do I free this girl? I need to free this girl for some reason because I know that Frankenstein's monster killed this girl, killed this boy. And so I have to free the girl because it's the right thing to do. But why would his first instinct not to find evidence or to capture the monster?
Right.
His first instinct is to go and track down Mary Shelley and say, hey, you have information on it and you have to help me free her. Free the nanny. She hasn't written the book yet, man.
Right.
Like, how dumb are you?
Yeah.
Like, why would a book come out already about the guy that you're meeting who has the event happening?
Right.
You already know that that's not what's happening here. Like, he's so stupid. He goes to this woman's property. By the way, it looks like present day Switzerland. I had to look it up. It's actually Italy. There's like palm trees. I had to look into it. Switzerland does have a lot of this and it's gorgeous, but you can clearly see boats in the background, like a yacht, and you can see I saw a power line, and I heard online that there's a scene where I don't know if it's her brother. I think it's her brother, right? She had a really weird family. There was like a bunch of stuff. She was actually like the mistress.
She was Mary Shelley. A mistress of someone very big in the government, right? Wasn't she?
No, I don't know. He's some kind of baron.
Or influential person.
Yeah, and like they were all basically the yuppie versions of back then. Like everybody was doing drugs and everybody was partying and they were all doing free love, a lot of sex parties.
Mm-hmm.
There's like a lot of stories on them and the crazy seances and the weird things that they would do. Well, he goes and finds one of them who's played by Jason Patrick.
Yes.
Who's in this for about 5 minutes.
Yes.
And he is out of control acting. He's like just really overdoing the whole thing. But I heard when they're in the scene together, you can see a car drive by. I'm mad that we didn't notice it, but we were also watching this on poor quality.
It's supposed to be 1812, for God's sake. I mean,
yeah.
They already showed us a power line.
Well, we thought it was Cat. It could have been Cat. Cat was just driving around in the background.
It could have been Cat, yeah.
There could be a whole movie in here with the Ferris Bueller people, like the two guys that stole the car. They drove around for a joyride. They found Cat in the forest. Watch my car. Don't let a pigeon shit on it, right? And then they're just driving Cat around. Yeah, he goes to this house. This is his first instinct to free this woman, is he goes to their house, meets the family, and then basically says, I know you're a great writer and your book is amazing, but you can help me free the nanny. What would her evidence be?
Yeah.
She wrote it's not...
A book that hasn't been released yet, and an event that really hasn't...
It's science fiction.
Yeah.
Like, why would... I'm so confused is what he... And then he's like... And this guy's supposed to be a famous scientist who created a talking robot car.
Yeah.
And also created a rip in space-time, basically. And he doesn't know she hasn't written the book yet because the events are happening around him. I mean, like, what a fucking moron. Like, that would be predicting the future.
Oh, my God.
Like, if she wrote the book, then he would be like, oh, you know, she can see time. And then she's like, I don't know what you're talking about. I didn't write it yet. He goes to his car and actually has the car print out the novel. Twice, by the way. He prints it out twice in this movie. I was like, man, talk about, like, misusing your printer, man. Like,
I know. What a waste of paper. A full
novel prints out. And he goes, I need the hardcover. I'm like, what the fuck?
Wait, but before he goes to Jason Patrick's house... Doesn't he follow Dr. Frankenstein to the woods
after the trial? I forgot because we were talking and we just kind of rushed through it. But yeah, he
follows him to the woods and that's where he sees that he's meeting up with the monster who I motion to you looks like Joaquin Phoenix in makeup.
Yeah, it's the first time we see the monster and he follows him because this is another thing that he thinks he can do to free the girl, is he thinks that he can follow him by sneaking around in the bushes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you know, there was actually another time that he followed them, but we couldn't see what was happening. But Dr. Frankenstein and the monster have a, like, fight or some sort, or an argument, and he says that he needs to him to make something for him. And he knocks over rubble, and it, like, falls on our main character, John Hurt, mm-hmm. and it knocks him out, and he has his first weird trip dream.
Okay, I don't understand what's going on here, because the whole entire movie was... The transfer was really bad. And then they do a dream sequence of that whole Scooby-Doo, like...
Yeah, the Wayne's World thing.
Yeah, the Wayne's World thing. And we're supposed to see what's happening? I didn't understand. All I could see was just bits and pieces of weird visuals. I don't even know what I was looking at.
Yeah, it was like he was walking through a sea of people trying to grab at him, pull him under.
Yeah, and because this is a Corman movie, I thought for sure there were going to be some kind of monsters, like, and they were just going to take their clothes off, and the boobies would be flopping around and stuff, but that's not what happened.
This is like some kind of, like, hell. Like, he is, like, I guess, like, Dante's Inferno type of thing in his dreams. I really don't know, but we get those a lot. That's the only reason I brought it up. So the second time we see the monster, fully see the monster, is that the monster grabs him because he's hiding. Now, he already knows that Victor Frankenstein created a monster man,
mm-hmm.
and that he's standing, he's following him so closely that not once does the scientist think, maybe the monster might find me first.
No, he doesn't think about anything, yeah. which is funny because this guy comes from the future. So, like, you know all of this.
You already know the information.
Yeah. How would you ever think? It's like he's not even, he just doesn't give a rat's ass. It's just like, you know, he just lets things happen.
He doesn't think about anything.
Yeah.
And you know what I'm also sick of? That the Frankenstein monster is like a ninja.
Like, oh my God.
No one can hear him coming until the last second.
Right. But can I just say that I think this is like one of the first times he's actually verbally coherent, where he could speak in full sentences.
We've seen him in other things that he could do this, but yeah, this is the first. I mean, I can't say this is the first because I'm not really sure, but we're so used to the Universal movies.
Yeah.
And he doesn't fully talk much. Some of his language gets more and more in each movie.
Yeah, but in this one, he speaks with full sentences. He's, you know,
completely, he's much more. Yeah.
He's pretty well versed in, you know, the English language.
Now, to talk about what you were talking about, the monster, what he looks like. There's so many things here to talk about. What the hell were they thinking? One of the things I cannot stand, his eyes are stitched.
His eyeballs, yeah.
How does that work?
Well, you know, you just go to the store and you buy some contact lenses.
And with stitches on them?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, of course.
During Halloween, you can
get them. But in the movie sense, why weren't there stitches on the eyes? Like, how would that even work?
Well,
like, what are you stitching together?
Well, see, the retina had to be applied very carefully and strategically. And back then they didn't have, like, lasers or anything. So he had to, like, you know, just get a needle and thread and stitch that bad boy on.
That's like stitching together a boba that you found in your boba tea. Like, I mean, like, how does this work? Like, I don't think that's how that works. I was like, why wouldn't you just have a different color eye on each eye?
Yeah.
Or, you know, something that looks a little like bloodshot. They actually zoom in on it, like they're really impressed with it. They're like, look how cool this is. There's stitches in his eyes.
Yeah, it was just...
What day does he have to go to the doctor to get the staples removed or the stitching removed from his eyeballs?
Well, I was going to say, like, the makeup on this creature, it reminded me of so many other creatures in other horror movies. And no, he's not green. You know, he's not like your traditional, like, grayish color like Frankenstein's monster we're used to. He's basically a regular skin tone.
Oh, no. He looks like a red kidney bean.
But he does have regular skin tone, but he's all, like, battered and fucked up and stretched. He's very stretched.
Yeah, I like that you said he looks like Joaquin Phoenix stretched.
He does. He looks like Joaquin Phoenix in makeup.
And I said he looks like the cover of the movie Brain Dead, which is like a guy's face being, like, pulled. Like, it's just like a mask pulled into, like, these things stitched on. Like, imagine Handsome Jack from the Borderlands games, but if it was like held out.
Oh my god, you're right. Yeah, I'm looking at that right now.
But the worst part is he has long hair.
Yeah.
He's got like weird, and it's weird doll hair, like a pony hair.
Okay, he looked like Victor Crowley. He did.
Okay, I could see that. I also said there's another movie, and I can't think of what it. Maybe it was Tales from the Dark Side, when the wife is like, never ask me about that day, and then he does, and then it turns out she's like a gargoyle, like from that movie. Like when she rips open, she's like a gargoyle monster. It is a weird facial thing on this guy. And the weirdest aspect of it is that he has fingers in the wrong spot. And I don't understand, again, this is like the eyeball. Why does he have, he has like an extra thumb next to his pinky.
Yeah, I don't understand. What is the reasoning to add on? It doesn't make any sense.
Like, if Frankenstein is a doctor or a scientist, he's a real dumb one. We just watched like the Fallout TV show. And in that, they had like a guy with a nose on his, like they put a nose in his forehead. That's the kind of thing I'm thinking here. It's just like a guy's like, I don't know, I could do it, I guess. Let's just do it. Like, I don't know what the function is, what the idea behind this is. It just looks fun. Like, what if we took his eyeball out and just stuck one over here, you know? Like, it's so bizarre.
Yeah.
And the only thing on him that's, like, weird is his thumbs. Like, otherwise, he's just a guy that looks like, for some reason, had a face transplant.
I mean, yeah, and he has, like, a really big neck.
Yeah, I mean, he just looks like... Yeah, it looks like roid rage a little bit.
Yeah. But, like, I mean, he doesn't look scary or terrifying or anything like that. He just looks like he's been through something.
Yeah, he's been through something. Well, naturally, he sneaks up on our lead character and grabs him and tells Frankenstein that he's going to kill him. And Frankenstein's... Now, my first thought was, why doesn't Frankenstein go, I don't give a shit, I don't even know who that is.
Like, I just met him yesterday. I just met that guy,
yeah. You killed my brother.
Yeah.
At this point, I don't give a shit.
Yeah, how about you killed my brother and I'm letting an innocent girl take the fall?
Yeah, and he doesn't give a shit about the brother and he does not give a shit about the nanny.
Nope.
He doesn't give a shit about anybody. For some reason, he tells the monster, and well, he doesn't tell the monster to let the guy go. He just shoots his flintlock handgun. You know, he uses a flintlock gun and shoots it at the monster and it hits a tree. But the monster freaks out like he has never heard something like this before. That means that Victor Frankenstein has never shot at him before.
Yeah.
Never tried to kill him. He acts like it's like he has just seen the most violent explosion in his life. He's like, and he like runs off. And that's how he saves our main character. Okay, whatever. But that's when, for no reason, again, scientist, butterfly effect, naturally, what does he do? Does he A, not tell Victor Frankenstein where he's from or anything that's going on? Or does he B, give him a little bit of information and try to ask Victor, sneaking, you know, being intelligent, help him free the girl? Or does he C, tell him everything about the future? Well, this guy does see, and he tells him everything. He shows him his car.
Why not?
He tells him that he virtually is from the future.
Yep.
And that he knows everything. And he even gives him an envelope to write a letter to his wife and tell this guy to go give it to him, to her. He's like, go send this letter to my wife. It's going to help us free the girl. Why doesn't Victor Frankenstein go?
Why? Okay, here's the thing. This is, Frankenstein's a bad man, okay?
Oh, yeah.
He is going to let this girl hang when he knows that his monster creation killed his brother. Okay, what is with the letter? Why can't he speak to his own wife?
Yeah.
That's number one. And number two, yes, you're right. Why can't he just go down to the freaking judge and be like, hey, I created something. He's a hot mess of a thing.
Well, he would be a criminal. Why couldn't he say that guy There's a guy in a courtroom at one point. It says, oh, and we see our main character walks upon dead sheep or lamb in the forest. And it's just so bad. They're laying down sleeping and then he just puts some fake guts on top of them and they're breathing.
Yeah, that was funny.
But in the courtroom, this guy who owns these animals says, a giant man came out of the forest and killed my sheep,
mm-hmm.
and knocked me over the head. Who would have done that? And everybody's like, ah, you're drunk and you're an idiot. I'm like, wait a minute. Why would he lie?
Mm-hmm.
And why would he kill his own money? And why would he knock himself out? You know, he says, maybe the kid was killed by this monster. And everybody's like, ah, you're just an idiot. Now, all Victor Frankenstein has to do is, I also saw the monster.
That's true. He doesn't have to say, I created this thing.
Nothing. He can lie.
Yeah, he can lie. He can totally lie. But he just lets this girl hang. He lets her hang.
It's like he's almost into the idea of the monster to the point where he's allowing it to live.
Yes, and the monster keeps saying, I'll leave you alone. I'll leave you alone if you make me a mate.
Yeah.
And, like, just fucking do it, guy.
Yeah.
Because he needs to stop hurting people.
Weren't you, like, because at this point, we got time-traveling scientist. We have, like, a time machine, like, kind of storyline.
Mm-hmm.
We have Frankenstein. We have Mary Shelley, the writer of Frankenstein.
Mm-hmm.
Weren't you imagining, oh, any minute now, Count Dracula is just going to show up in this film.
I was waiting.
I know. Or, oh, you know, like, just something insane. I was expecting something else. Because at this point, I was like, they're just mixing in so many ideas here that I'm not sure anything makes any sense together. Why they even thought some of this would be. I mean, like, again, it's an interesting concept. There's something there, but it just doesn't do it. Like, it does nothing to it. Because
I just wasn't expecting a whole time travel thing.
Yes.
It was just quite ridiculous.
I wasn't expecting John Hurt to time travel from the future to the Poconos and hang out with Mary Shelley.
I know. So, explain this to me. Because he does meet up with Mary Shelley again.
Again. Because he can't stop the hanging. Because Frankenstein refuses to help him, and she's just hung. And this is the weirdest moment, is he runs up, not masked or anything, and tries to free the woman from hanging.
Yep.
She gets hung, but they just pick him up laughing and throw him into the ocean.
Yeah.
Now, I was like, shouldn't he be jailed?
Like, he probably would have been hanged for that injustice.
Yes.
Whatever. So anyway, he washes up on shore, and guess who finds him? Oh, Mary Shelley.
Just washes up on shore. And yeah. Again, he has another one of his dreams because he's drowning. And he has another dream. And in the dream, it's like evolving more. Each time they have the dream, and it's like more elements of what's happening in his world
mm-hmm.
are in the dream. But this dream is particularly crazy because we just mentioned all the pop culture references.
Mm-hmm.
Now he's in Dr. No, the James Bond film, where the villain, he's on the table like James Bond, and the villain is shooting it looks like a heightened version of him in makeup. I'm not really sure because of the feet, like how we could see it, but he's shooting a laser beam, just like in Dr. No, which was going to cut James Bond, but James Bond, of course, gets out. Unfortunately, our main character doesn't. He gets cut in half,
mm-hmm.
and he wakes up, and then he's in front of Mary Shelley. He's just washed up onto her.
This is the most stupid thing I have ever seen. Honestly, he washes up on shore. No, he didn't drown, mind you. Okay, but he was unconscious. All right, fine. Okay. But he washes up in her face. Then they proceed to walk together and talk together. And he tells her again about how wonderful her book is that she hasn't written yet.
It goes for, well, I was going to say multiple choice. Does he, A, share some, you know, share a nice little moment that can relate to Mary Shelley and they're going to share some stuff? B, you know, try to romance her and maybe he's falling for her? Or C, show her everything from the future and tell her that you're from the future and then show her her own book.
Yeah.
It's going to be C. This guy's a fucking idiot.
Yeah, well, there's a couple of elements of all of those items in there. Because, yes, he does show her the future, the car, the book, everything.
But
she even asks him, how does it end? And he's like, well, I don't know if I should tell you that. You already told her everything, you jackass.
Yeah, he's like, do you really want to know your own future?
I mean, why don't you just read her the book at this point?
He prints it out and gives her the book, and she's actually shocked because it's her married name.
Yeah, she's not married yet. He literally, like, let me tell you something. If this was Back to the Future, there would have already been a time paradox, okay? He completely destroys the future. Completely.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
And then he freaking has sex with her.
Yeah, that's the oddest moment ever in movies.
Are you kidding? Like, if you're sleeping with her, why do you think that she's going to get married? She's going to want to be with you. Like, I don't understand. You're going to change the course of this woman's entire future.
Yeah.
He doesn't even think about it.
He shows her a talking car. Let me ask you something right now. Would you, if you were her in the past and you were shown a talking car, do you throw your novel out and write about a talking car?
Yeah, I probably would have, yes. Number one, thought it was, space aliens or something.
Yes.
Okay. I would have never thought that this is mind-blowing. Okay. It's mind-blowing for... If you see this shit in the 90s, okay? Let alone 1812.
Yeah. I mean, the moment I would think is, if I was her, I would be like this. Oh, I was just going to write a novel about some scientist that creates a man? That's nothing now. I'm going to write about a time traveler who has a talking car.
Yeah. Just changed the course of everything. It would change
her writing.
This movie is so fucking stupid.
She would have written him into the novel.
Yes. He would have changed everything. Everything would have changed.
He would have been a part of it. And I love how they have sex or they fall in love. It's just like kind of like a second where he is walking with her. First off, they go on a road trip and they're driving on roads.
Yeah, there's roads.
There's roads. And he picks her up on their little beach house that has like everything that's modern, like a fence.
That's what I told you. I'm like, it's a freaking resort in the Poconos.
Yeah. He picks her up and spins around with her, and he's just like, yay, we're in love now. And then they just have sex. And she says, actually, she says, you know, I'm in an open relationship.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
I practice free love.
Yeah.
And then she goes, you know, she unbuttons, and she's like, come and get it.
Okay. Well, I can tell you right now, there's not one nipple in this movie.
Yeah. You want to talk about their age?
There is a... What did you say? It was 24 years? He's 50
years old in this movie. Oh, John Hurt.
Uh-huh.
And Bridget Fonda is 26. Oh, you kept asking me, like, what's the age gap here? Because this is an odd relationship. And I was like, well, it's not that bad. It could be way worse. If she was, like, a 20-year-old and he was, like, a 65-year-old or 70-year-old, I would be like, this is
weird.
I still
think it's gross. And I think, I mean, the only reason she's in this movie is because her father is friends with the director. Period.
Yeah, she's talented.
Period. But she had nothing to do in this.
Yeah, like, there's no
reason why he would have hired her for a special
Jason
talent.
Patrick was in this. That blew my mind. He has no lines.
There's nothing for him in this. Nothing. And
like, in the 80s, he had, like, full roles. Like, he...
Yeah, but now in this, it's like, they just put him in there because he's pretty.
I guess he was hardly even in it.
Yep, for just a second. But her, she was the most miscast. But then again, I feel like this whole movie was miscast because it's just so
I think John
odd.
Hurt works. I think that Raul Julia is also very... He's just so intense that I think that he kind of works for everything. But the problem is he's not given any material.
He's not given anything to do.
No.
He has no intensity in this movie. Even in Street Fighter... He had more intensity in that as Bison than he did in this movie.
And he was, like, dying while filming that movie.
Yes.
And in this movie, there's no reasoning to be so tame.
No.
You made me. Now you would destroy me. Why?
You murdered my brother.
Murdered?
You stopped his life.
He was easily crushed. You should have made him strong, Victor, like me.
I did not make William.
No? Then who did?
He was born of woman, you monstrous wretch.
And he was just, there's nothing there. There's nothing there. I was literally hugging my, which is kind of funny, but Mr. Frank and Teddy is what I call him. And he almost had me out because I was so comfy hugging Mr. Frank and Teddy. And it almost had me out because I was so bored during the dialogue scenes because I'm just like, why are we having dialogue? There's no point. He's already ruined the future. What is the reasoning?
It gets worse. It gets crazy because it gets so weird that after having sex, he goes and just hangs out with Victor Frankenstein again, although Frankenstein's an asshole. And it turns out that he's like, Frankenstein's just like, I have to make a mate for him now. And he's like, why? Why don't we just kill him? And he's like, no, I have to make a mate. And then he'll leave me alone forever. You heard him. And he's like, and if I don't, he's going to kill my wife. Now, for some odd reason, his wife takes it like a chair, whatever, a carriage.
A horse and buggy.
By herself.
In the middle of the night.
Although she has a guy that works for them.
So she has a whole bunch of servants and all that stuff.
But there's always a guy who drives a carriage.
She literally rides in the middle of the night. To where was she going? I don't even remember.
To see Frankenstein. Okay. I know. He got that because he gave the letter. I didn't understand any of that.
So
well, she races off, but Frankenstein, the monster, is waiting in the forest for her, and he's able to run at her, knock her out of the carriage, and now, in one of the most odd gore scenes I think I've ever seen, he looks like he's going to rip her like her top off.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, it rips her in half.
I thought that this was going to be the quintessential Corman moment where, you know, there's rape in the woods.
Yeah.
It's in a lot of his movies.
I could have seen that.
I thought that was going to happen. But no. He rips off her top, but in this at the same motion, she's ripped in half. Like, you know, in that scene in The Thing where he's putting the paddles on the guy's chest.
Yeah.
Like that. And she's dead. Dead. Yeah, it just kills her.
You see her, like, chest ripped open. But then all of a sudden, they throw a leg.
What?
You didn't see it?
I didn't see any leg.
A leg rolls over.
A leg?
Yeah, I didn't understand it at all. I was like, what is that?
I didn't see any leg.
Yeah, they show her, like, her chest split open, and then all of a sudden a leg rolls over.
Oh.
And they show a shot of it. I was like, what the hell? Did she completely split in half, like a rack of lamb? Like,
oh, you know, my
like,
God.
What just happened here?
I didn't see that, but...
And this is even odder. Somehow... Both Victor and our main character have a sense that this is happening, so they run out into the forest and they meet her halfway and they find her dead body. Now,
how do they know that?
Does Victor A, cry and have an emotional breakdown? B, throw up and feel disgusted and want to commit suicide? Or C, not give a shit and take the body home and make it a bride? If you were thinking C, you'd be right.
So he doesn't shed a tear.
No, he just looks up and goes, I gotta make a bride now.
Gotta make a bride. Yeah, gotta do it.
A human being is no match for my creature. We are not very well made, you know. Our eyes are poor. Our limbs use muscles to the disadvantage of both. I have made wonderful improvements. Wonderful improvements.
And this is what's even crazy. Now, this is even more bizarre. A bunch of villagers come out of nowhere and they attack John Hurt and they tie him up to hang him.
I don't understand what's happening in this scene. I looked over at you and I'm like, you know what? Let's just save this for the podcast because I didn't understand what was happening.
The whole movie is like, okay.
This movie had its way of making me snooze. And then waking me up at the most inopportune time where I'm just like, what is this?
Yeah.
What is this?
Well, I guess Victor Frankenstein runs into into the woods and leaves John Hurt with the dead body of his wife. And the villagers find him and think that John Hurt was able to rip a woman in half. And so they tie him up and they're going to kill him. When Frankenstein now intervenes for no reason. Or the monster, I mean. Frankenstein's monster intervenes for no reason. And saves John Hurt by killing all of the villagers in the most humorous ways. He just, like, knocks one's arm off. He just splits a head right off. It's so goofy. But it's like a bunch of rag
dolls. Why, though? It makes no sense. Why would he defend John Hurt? He doesn't know this guy or give a shit about anything.
And then Frankenstein comes out of the forest and goes, hey, don't kill him. He's going to help us make a bride. Now, Frankenstein has just seen his monster who has killed his wife. And he's just like, just help. Leave that guy alone. He's going to help us build the bride with my dead wife.
Yeah, that I'm going That's to give
it.
To you.
That's it.
Yeah, I'm going to give my dead wife, to you.
Yeah.
After he just killed her.
I mean, I guess. I guess. So he talks John Hurt, like, he threatens him with the monster, telling him he has to help him use his car's electricity to resurrect his wife as the bride for his monster. And so they do it. And there's like a whole thing where they talk to the car and they find out if we do this, it could send us to another time. And the car is like, I'll die, but I will force you into time again. And he's like, okay, let's do it. So he makes the monster hook up wires up to all the way up to the building's top, like in the movies that you've seen, and ties it to the cross. So when it gets electrocuted, it naturally gets struck by lightning. Of course, they can predict this. When it gets struck by lightning, and it also is the car battery, it'll not only resurrect the bride, but send them through time? And so naturally, that's exactly what happens. They get sent into the very, very far future where there's nothing left. It's basically just a wasteland of snow and ash, but the castle that they're in is like still there, kind of. And it not only was John Hurt beamed, but Frankenstein's monster was, and the bride of Frankenstein were all beamed into the future. And they have a little bit of a tussle, where the bride wakes up and basically she now has another thumb. I just want to point this out. I don't know how.
Why?
He was able to staple her back together, but he added a new thumb. Why so this guy's got an obsession with new thumbs. And it's so crazy. And also her face is again stretched.
Yeah,
Why would understand. He have done that? All he had to do is stitch her back together.
Yeah, nothing was wrong with her face. Her face was pretty.
Yes.
She just got hacked open in the center. So like, what are you doing to her face? Like, why did you need to do this? She looks like a piece of silly putty.
Yeah.
I don't get it.
Yeah. Does he have a thing for this? Like, he's like, man, you know, she's beautiful and all, but if her face was a little more stretched out and if she had another thumb, oh my God, she would be really hot.
I don't get what is the reasoning of adding another appendage. What can be gained from adding another appendage?
Yeah.
It makes no sense.
Naturally, Victor goes to kill the monster with his flintlock gun again, and the bride grabs the gun and has him shoot her in the heart, and she dies, making Frankenstein's monster pick up Frankenstein and basically rip him apart in the torso and then throw him against a rock, and he just dies.
Yep.
This leaves John Hurt and Frankenstein to walk around the wasteland, and somehow John Hurt gets away from him in the wasteland, but ends upon what I could only explain as a Vault-Tec vault, and he wanders into the vault, and he is met with the film's budget, which is every set piece from Star Trek 2001 and Battlestar Galactica thrown into one room with green neon laser light. Like, it's like a laser light roller rink from hell.
What was this supposed to be? Was this supposed to be his old lab?
It is
John Hurt's
creation grown into like a monstrosity that it just kept growing. The movie's supposed to be a take on Prometheus, you know, the Titan who stole technology to give to humanity, and it was tortured he was bound to a rock and picked apart every day of his life. His liver was eaten.
Mm-hmm.
This is supposed to be a take on that. And this is called Unbound.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea here is that he was never met with his crimes, and so it just kept growing. Like, it went out of control if he wasn't stopped. And so here we are with a technology nightmare. But, everything about this bit is baffling. Now, this is a character who wanted to save a girl wrongfully accused. And you think that he's maybe learning a lesson? Like, this is like some kind of Scrooge scenario where he's like sent back in time and sees that Frankenstein is him. It's a version of him. It's like a mirror. Oh, I'm also creating bad things and I'm playing God. Right. And so, you think he'll learn, but no, he's worse than ever. Now he doesn't give a shit at all. He's excited to see his robot apocalypse that he's created. Right. But what's really baffling is out of nowhere, like the Kool-Aid man, the Frankenstein monster bashes through a wall. He just appears.
It was funny because you're like, as soon as that happened, you're like, oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. He just comes through the wall and says, hey, I'm here now. Now this is where John Hurt and the Frankenstein monster could just have a conversation. All he has to say is like, okay, let's just talk. And the Frankenstein monster virtually says to him, I'm alone. You've created, Frankenstein might have been a monster creating a monster, but you're even more of a monster. You created nothing. Now I'm truly alone.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, now this is the moment where he can say to him, you're not alone. We're together. I'm not going to treat you like him. You'll have a friend. I can teach you. You can learn. We can, I should have done multiple choice here again, because that's all he had to do. Instead, he pulls out the magic fucking flintlock gun out of nowhere. You have to load these damn things.
Mm-hmm.
He just shoots the monster and basically almost blows his arm off. And the monster very sadly says, why do you want to kill me? And I'm like agreeing with him. Like, what did he do to you?
Nothing.
He was mad at Victor.
Yep.
You and him have no problem.
Nope.
You could get along. You're alone at the end of the world. Why wouldn't you just, hey, let's just hang out.
Yep.
Let's just be friends. And he starts killing. So naturally we have a fight between the two of them, where Frankenstein rips his own arm off and just starts smacking all the things in this laboratory. The laboratory, there's not one lick of rhyme or reason in here. In fact, it's all, I know this is tech, this is high technology in the 90s, but it uses the clapper.
Uh-huh. It sure does.
He uses the clapper to control laser beams that are just lights.
Well, they're just lights, yeah. But
they're not.
Until they're not. Until that he claps the shit out of the lasers and basically claps Frankenstein's monster to death.
I guess he claps, punches his hand, and then waves around like an idiot. And laser lights just keep hitting Frankenstein's monster, making him blow up. Kind of not all the way. It would be cool if he blew up.
Yeah.
And then while Frankenstein's dying, the monster says, you can never kill me. You don't understand. You can never kill me. And he dies, right? And now, this character, John Hurt, is free. And he's in his lab that he's so happy about. But he leaves. In fact, the laser shows him the way out. And he opens another vault door into the nothingness. And he walks outside. And he sees, in the distance, a robot apocalypse. Like, just like a robot city.
Mm-hmm.
And Frankenstein told him, the monster told him, this is the heart of the monstrosity that you built. The monster that you built. And he didn't know what that meant until he walked outside and saw, there's the city. And then we hear a narration from Frankenstein's monster that says, I'm not, you think I'm dead, but I'm with you forever. I'm unbound. Finn.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Why? Okay. During this whole scene, I'm waiting for the sky to open up and for Hurt to get transported back through time. But that portal's gone.
Yeah, because it's the end. This is after the world ended.
Yeah.
And his technology took over. It created a hellscape that the nightmares, I think, were telling him. Like I said, the Prometheus storyline, where it's just like, this is his tide. That's why they're saying that he is Victor Frankenstein. He is the monster. And mm-hmm. You know what? I forgot that they say that line. When the Frankenstein monster asks him, why are you trying to kill me? He responds, I am Frankenstein.
Yeah.
Why this character all of a sudden goes to this? Why he doesn't, like, Mary Shelley and him had a thing. Why that goes nowhere? It has no relevance here. I thought they were going to make her the bride. I thought she was going to be involved in this somehow. Yeah, well, but how would they do that?
Because she has to write the book eventually.
Oh, he also showed her a talking car. It doesn't even matter anymore.
None of it matters. This whole movie is just like, okay, what's the reasoning here?
It's like monsters creating monsters, basically a warning of technology and how there is no difference between one and the other. It is a concept that I think is interesting, but the way that it is executed, every scene, I just kept going, that's baffling. This is a weird idea.
I was baffled through the whole entire film, and also very, like, ugh.
It's rush.
Boring.
They
rush through it. It was, I was bored to tears. I was just bored. That's why you had to keep looking over and be like, are you awake? Unfortunately, I am awake. Yes, I don't want to be awake. I want to take a nap. But it was just a snooze fest,
This
movie. It was a snooze fest. He single-handedly destroyed the world by fucking up, you know.
Well, that's the point, yeah. Like, you know, unchecked. And if you're unbound, you would just create until everything was gone.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I get the point, but it's just, it was not executed properly. And this did not at all feel like a Corman movie that we're used to.
And I said that in last week's episode. I said, I'm afraid that the last movie we're going to do is him in the 90s. And that means it's got none of that vibe, that culty feeling. It's more of that too clean. And the movie it feels like an afternoon special. It feels like a TV movie event.
It doesn't feel culty.
It doesn't
the
feel.
The thing I love about Corman movies is that they all feel culty.
Yeah, that drive-in feeling. This has none of that. This feels very straight-laced. Mm-hmm. Again, no nudity. The violence is bizarre and goofy. They could have used some cool effects. I mean, Corman knows a lot of people. You know, he actually went, when the producer came to him, they asked him, come back to direct. We want you to come back and direct again, and I want you to make a movie. He went to Wes Craven and asked him to write a script for him to make this movie. And it kept getting passed around until he didn't like it too much. And then he had the writer of this movie do an adaptation of the book, Frankenstein Unbound. And then he also went in and rewrote it with this guy.
Mm-hmm.
So he was basically changing on the fly, Corman. And maybe that's the problem. Maybe the problem is that they just couldn't figure it out what they wanted to do with it, and it just kept evolving. But I would think that you would want some sex and violence.
Yeah, there needed to be something in this.
You really
I was bored to tears.
You got to grab some of that somewhere. And I'm shocked.
I wasn't
bored.
Go for
the nudity or whatever.
I wasn't bored because there was no sex and violence. I was just bored because of the whole tone of the movie.
Yeah, but wouldn't that have picked up each scene?
Slow. If
they did it more clever, you'd be like, oh, cool.
Yeah, it would have kept me more alert and awake. Yeah. That's for sure. But,
I mean, I'm glad we didn't get a John Hurt sex scene. I'm glad.
Well, we got enough of it with the Bridget Fonda. Just some kissing. It was like, eh. But I, what would you give this? We got to give this a score.
Well, is it the worst movie I've ever made? No.
No.
No, it's not.
It sucks.
It's not even the worst Frankenstein movie I've ever seen.
I'm going to challenge you on that because I think it might
There's some Universal ones that are pretty bad.
No, no.
And I know there's other ones too.
No, no, I'm gonna challenge you on that.
Wow.
No, this is probably the worst Frankenstein movie I've ever seen. I didn't. Yes, it is.
I'll think about this. I know we've seen others like Frankenstein versus Jesse James or whatever. Is that what it was? Jesse James and then Frankenstein's aunt or whatever the hell that movie was. That's like awful.
Oh, stop. That was There's a ton to be funny, of those. But
no, I don't think it is. I'm going to give this a 4.
Really?
Yeah, I don't think it was the worst. I don't even think it was that bad necessarily. Okay. I think it's got some ideas, and I think it's a TV movie, and I do think it would have fit perfectly in a Jim Henson Storytellers episode.
Oh my God.
Instead of being an actual full-length movie release is baffling to me.
Why are you saying Jim Henson? Okay, stifle yourself.
I said Jim Henson had a show called Storytellers.
I know.
It would be perfect in there.
It's not...
If it was cut down to 40 minutes and was just more of a tighter movie, yeah, no, absolutely would.
Wow, Scotty, I can't believe you're giving it a 4. I'm giving it a 3.
That's not that far off.
I mean, I want to give it a 2.
It wasn't that bad.
It was bad. This movie was bad. It was probably the worst of the Cormans that we watched. And that's including Death Sport.
No yes, way. It is. Death Sport is way worse.
I would rather watch Death Sport. At least there was a freaking something happening in there.
Death Sport's bad.
Something happened in there. There's a tit, at least.
I feel like this is more competent than Death Sport. I think Death Sport is a mess without story or plot whatsoever. No, This one at least tried to have a plot.
It tried to have a plot, but the plot was terrible.
I think it's better than Death Sport. Death Sport has no plot.
But Death Sport was more entertaining. And I was not asleep.
Yeah, but I think we were expecting what Death Sport is, and that's why you were awake. You were expecting something better from this. And what did I say? Anytime an older director or writer comes and makes a universal horror monster into the into a later generation, it's the worst thing. And I'm so scared. And that's why Argento's Dracula is so bad. That yeah. It's like, this is not even Argento. What is this?
I know. See, that's the thing.
That's Corman the same thing here.
Stick with what he's good at, and Argento should stick with what he's good at.
Of course.
And that brings us to our segment of why we can't have nice things. I'll show you two extremes of online reviews and how the internet destroys the movie rating system. So I'm going to give you one 1-star review and one 10-star review of Frankenstein Unbound. All right, let's start with the 1 out of 10. This is titled Awful by Induction, Proof Included. I actually watched the entire movie. You might be surprised at this, but I was under the impression from the first scene that it couldn't possibly get any worse. Actually, it was almost like a proof of awful by induction. It kept getting worse with each scene. If scene K is bad and scene K plus 1 is worse, scene K plus X will be worse than the one before it. I challenge you to disprove me. Include certificate of sanity.
All right, that's funny.
That was funny.
That's funny.
And then the 10-star review is, if you like schlock, you're going to love it. Corman's masterpiece. Uneven mood throughout the movie,
Jesus.
Script all over the place, high production value compared to Corman's average, special effects from the 70s, early 80s, computers that are huge boxes with flashing lights, sci-fi cars out of the 60s, John Hurt and Raul Julia giving good performances while trying not to laugh. The script is the real winner here. Can't even believe they managed to shoot this. 10 out of 10 from me. Wish I could rate it higher.
So stupid.
That is the dumbest review I've ever
heard.
Yeah,
I just can't stand
that. You just completely contradicted your 10.
Yeah, he kept doing it. But he's being a jerk on purpose.
He is.
It's just like, oh, I gotta give it the best, even though I know it's terrible.
Well, there are only 2
tens. And it's not even that good schlocky.
It's not. There are only 2 tens and 2 ones.
Schlock means a Corman has schlock movies.
Yes.
These are not. This wasn't a schlocky movie. This was
not at all.
To me, this was too safe. And I think that's why you're hating it as much as you are. I think it's just too safe and too generic and too mediocre to be good in your eyes. And anyway, you know, even decent in your eyes.
Yeah.
I think I raise it up because I do see what he was trying for. I think a 4 is still a low score. So I mean, I don't think that's that bad. But on our list, we've been doing all the movies, and this is our 34th movie on our list. And you're saying it's worse than Death Sport, but can we at least have find each other in the middle here and agree that Death Sport might be a little worse? Will you at least agree with me that it is worse than Leprechaun in Space, or better than Leprechaun in Space?
So you think this movie is better than Leprechaun in Space?
I think it is. But you're saying no.
No. Nope. No way.
You're saying that this is worse than Toxic Adventure 4 and Leprechaun in Space.
Christ. I mean, I think it's worse than... This is definitely worse than Leprechaun in Space, but it's better than Toxic Avenger 4.
Well, we had Toxic Avenger 4 at 8 and Leprechaun in Space at 7.
Shit. Well, yeah. Put it wherever you want.
Oh, jeez. All right, it's definitely going to go right between Toxic Avenger 4 and The Son of the Mask. Is that okay?
Okay, that's fine.
All right.
That'll
be our number 9 on our list, our ranking. It's still in the top 10.
This was bad. I hated it.
I knew you were going to. I really do. Oh, the Christmas tree is at number 12.
Are you happy it got booted out of the top 10?
Oh, I said it every episode so far. We've started pointing it out. Yeah. I knew this wasn't going to be that good. I was a little worried about Corman's movies when deep diving into his huge movies that he's done. I knew it might be a little of a nervous thing because he makes so many movies.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, I was right. I think they pretty much went downward as we went along in the month. And I knew that this might be the biggest problem of the bunch.
Mm-hmm.
Although I still think Death Sport is by far the worst. It is a disaster of a film. Even the filmmakers hate it.
Let me ask you something. How many 90s movies do we have on our list? There's probably a lot, which just goes with my whole thing about how 90s movies are trash.
Have you said that?
Yes. I've said it many times.
I've always said, you always say the music, 90s music. I always say movies might be the worst. I think
90s in general is trash.
I know a lot of people get mad about that, but I definitely think the 90s movies, there's something about the changing of the film, what they're producing the films on. It's starting to get digital, everybody doing CGI, which is awful, except if you're Jurassic Park. Yeah, but I don't know. Going forward next month, hopefully we'll have some fun. We're going to start doing some TNA movies.
TNA, and hopefully they're movies from 1985. It's my favorite year for movies. That'd be fun.
We'll see. All right, so anything else to add before we leave?
No, just that, you know, Roger Corman, you are still a national treasure. You are 98 years old, and I hope you live to be 200.
I love that. Yeah. I really do love that.
I love him.
All right, everybody, thanks for listening. We're going to get the hell out of here and get some Z's from after this movie. And thanks for listening. Hit us up on social media. I am at Just Another Movie on Instagram, and Joe is at The Crafty Misfit on Instagram. Always love to hear everybody's thoughts or opinions, or even if you just want to tell us the worst movie ever made in your opinion so we can watch it if we haven't seen it. Love to hear it. Thank you so much. Have a good one. Bye.
A weapon. A weapon beyond your wildest imagination, General. A particle beam that simply makes the enemy disappear. Project Safe World can give your armed forces the power of a black hole.
What the hell was that?
Some negligible atmospheric vibration, huh?
Barely measurable.
Will they fund the next step?
Time out, Doc. In the 3 months since you've been testing this thing, we've had freak weather, people disappearing, and these time slips. I'm sorry, but we have a very public crisis brewing here.
All right, so we have a side effect to contend with. It's not the end of the world.
The president is getting a sore throat from denying any knowledge of this program. Joe, I've got to tell him something.
Yes, well, tell him. When we implode an object, it slips out of time. And right now, when it goes, it sort of leaves the door open.
What you're trying to say is that you seriously screwed up.
He wanted a weapon. He's got a weapon.
We got work to do.